For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
Ionized Yeast presents Lights Out, Everybody. Stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries of the unknown. We tell you this frankly, so if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now.
This is Arch Obler. For Ironized Yeast tonight, a story of that still small voice which civilized men call conscience. But first, Frank Martin.
The way you feel, that can make all the difference in your life. If you're run down, losing weight, feel tired too much of the time, and if vitamin B1 and iron shortage is what's to blame, listen. Ironized Yeast tablets give you both vital substances. Vitamin B1 with iron. Men and women who were short of them now tell how these pleasant little tablets help them regain glorious pep and energy and needed pounds. So today they can really enjoy living again. Folks, did you get that name? It's Ironized Yeast Tablets. And now, Lights Out, Everybody.
Keep moving along. Keep moving along, ladies and gentlemen. Keep moving. There ain't no life on here. Keep moving.
Hey, officer, what's going on in the hall? What's the blooming attraction?
Read the signs, my man. Read the signs.
Huh? Oh. The great Peter Stransky, world-famous explorer, appearing in person in lecture on headhunters of the Amazon. Go, Brian.
Move along, fella. Move along.
Oh, no, officer. Will you tell a bloke what that headhunting is referring to? Who's on to name?
Now, look here, you're obstructing traffic. It's lecturing, the man is. Lecturing on these heathen tribes that hunt their neighbor's heads. Now, move along, man. Move along, or I'll take you in.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, now you know the story of these strange motion pictures I have shown you this evening. One of the first time in history motion pictures taken of the lower Brazilian region. Someday soon I hope to return to Brazil and bring back more cinematic records of the customs of these almost legendary savages, including actual specimens of heads and bodies taken and preserved in their bloodthirsty wars. When that day comes, I hope you will be as kind to me as you have been this evening. And so, good night until we meet again.
Excellent lecture, Stransky, excellent.
Yes. It went very well indeed.
Complete sellout. That headhunting theme meant excellent publicity in all the papers, you know.
Yes, yes, of course. Now, if you'll pardon me, my wife...
Oh, but my dear Stransky, autograph.
They paid to listen to my lecturing and see my motion pictures, not to get my autograph. I'm sorry, my wife, she will be waiting.
Oh,
and
come, don't worry about her. She's well taken care of.
Eh? What are you talking about?
I just passed her backstage, and she had a handsome young gentleman having quite a tete-a-tete, don't you know?
You will pardon me.
Oh, John.
Oh. Oh, come now, Ellen, you must do it.
Oh, but John, that's ridiculous. Who ever heard of such a silly thing?
I did, and that's why I'm telling it to you.
Well, I won't listen to another word. I really won't.
Oh, yes, you will.
No, I won't.
If I might be so bold as to interrupt.
Oh, Peter, it's you.
I'm sorry to interrupt your most interesting conversation, my dear wife, but we must go.
But, Peter, we...
Come, I said. The automobile is waiting.
But I... Very well, Peter. Good night, John.
Good night, Ellen.
Come. Get into the car, Ellen.
Why don't you say something, Peter?
Yes.
Yes, I will say something.
This.
Well, why don't you speak? Why don't you cry?
I wouldn't give you the satisfaction.
So, you save your tears for him, too. Say something.
I'm leaving you, Peter.
Leaving me? What are you talking about?
I spoke clearly enough. I'm leaving you.
Don't be a fool.
I'm trying not to be. That's why I'm leaving you. I should have done it a long time ago.
You'll go to him.
No, I'm going to divorce you first, Peter.
Divorce?
I won't have any difficulty about that, I'm sure.
No, never a divorce from me, never.
You'll have no choice. Please stop the car.
Yes.
Goodbye.
Ellen?
I'm sorry for you, Peter.
No. I'm sorry for you. And him. Well, come in, Ellen. Come in, and you too, young man.
What do you want of us, Peter?
It was very kind of you two to come here and join me tonight.
You said it was important, Strensky. What is it?
Oh, have a chair. Sit down. There is no hurry.
Well, John and I, we're on our way to the theater. If you don't mind, Peter, tell us what you want.
I want little. We have come to what the novelist would call the parting of the ways. As civilized human beings, we sit down. I, the husband, you, the wife, and you, young man, the, shall I say, favored one, to discuss our welfare.
I'm sorry it worked out this way, Peter. I...
This life, perhaps the fault was largely mine. I was not a very good husband.
You're acting very decently about all this, Mr. Strinsky. All I can say is I love Ellen very much.
And you love him, Ellen?
Yes, Peter.
If we could arrange matters quickly, I mean the divorce and all that sort of thing.
Of course. I just said we are together like civilized human beings. And now, if you will excuse me, I will close the door. The servants, you know.
He's acting surprisingly well about it all, Ellen.
I'm not so sure,
John. Oh, now what I have to say, I say in complete privacy.
Peter, just why did you want John and me here?
Yes. We should come to the point. You and I, Ellen, I suppose there is no use talking about us anymore. Is there?
No.
So, all right, there will be a gentleman. I will withdraw as gracefully as my clumsy self will permit. First, then, we will sign the papers.
Papers?
I want you to waive dower rights.
Oh, just as you wish.
Excellent. So here is the legal form as drawn up by my solicitor. I assure you, it's quite in order. You will sign first, young man.
Me?
Yes. Yes, as a witness, you understand?
Oh, very well. My pen.
No, no, no. Use this one, please. Here.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
John, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Just a scratch, the pen point.
Oh, I'm so clumsy.
John,
it's nothing, really. See, the pen point hardly broke the skin.
Yes, but it did break the skin.
Oh, yes, John. You see, a drop of blood.
Oh, it's nothing at all. Just a scratch. Unimportant.
Why did you laugh like that, Peter?
He said unimportant, and yet it is the most important scratch your young man has ever known.
How's that?
What do you mean, Peter? What's wrong?
You feel something, John?
What?
A constriction between the eyes, perhaps?
Peter.
Or maybe a strange pounding of the heart?
Peter, what
perhaps,
have you done?
Or perhaps, John, your vision blurs. You hear strange sounds in your ears. Eh, great lover?
Peter, answer me. What have you done? John, are you all right? Tell me, are you all right?
I don't know. My head is so strange.
John, what is it?
I sit down.
Peter, what's wrong with him? What's wrong? John... What do you... Your lips...
You cannot speak, can you, John? If you open your mouth, the words will be your last. A great lover?
Peter, tell me. Tell me, have you done something to him? Have you? John, look at me, darling. Speak to me. Tell me what's the matter.
Yes.
John!
Yes, speak, John.
Eleanor,
John! Peter, help me. He's fallen. Peter, help me. Help me.
Help you?
But, John, look at him. Look at him. He's ill, dying. Doctor, get a doctor.
Not a doctor, my little wife. Doctors cannot restore even great lovers after the poison of Barakata has entered the veins.
Poison? That pen? That scratch?
Ellen, you must... So, the thought of your lover's death draws the blood from your head and you faint, eh, my little wife? When you awaken, you will wish that you died with him. Again.
My arm.
You are bound in a chair. It is most discourteous of me, I know, but then, as you may remember, I always was a barbarian.
John. John.
You will keep your voice down.
John. You've got to tell me. Where is he? Why am I down here? John's not dead. He can't be dead. He's on that table, under the sheet. Not John.
Yes, John.
John, you've killed him. Let me loose. Let me go to him.
Stop that.
John.
Stop making
John.
That noise, you mad woman. Stop it. Stop it, I say. All right, I'll stop you then. I'll stop you. All right. There, my little wife, scream, yell, rave all you want. This gag over your mouth served its purpose well. Go on. Go on, you amuse me. So, now you have discovered it is useless to talk to the gag, eh, Ellen? It is such a waste of effort, is it not? So now that you are silent, I can go on with my work. Most important work. Yes, you were right about what was on this table here. See? I throw off the sheet. And he was such a handsome man. Well, I must get to work. Ah, you no longer try to speak, my little Ellen. Does the sight of these beautiful surgical instruments frighten you? They need not. They're not for you. They are for John. Yes, he is dead. Dead. The poison too quickly, but do you think I would let him rest in death? Oh, no. I loved you, Ellen. And as I loved you, I hate you. Watch closely. What? I'm sorry, I cannot understand you. Oh. You ask me what I'm going to do. The knives, sharp knives, you see them? No, they are not to dismember your precious John. Flesh buried, decays, and is gone. I want your dear John with me for a long time. Again, you ask the question. I'm trying so hard to explain. He's dead, and he will be dead. But in his death, he will serve a purpose. You remember I told you my savage Brazilian friends, the Yavaros, have a quaint custom of shrinking and preserving the bodies of their enemies. Well, I studied their methods most carefully. John Douglas was my enemy. Here he lies. And I will do with him as the Yavaros do with their enemies. So, now you understand. When I'm through with him, your lover will be a little leathery-skinned man, a doll-like in size, a trophy for my trophy room. Who will suspect that in that little leathery doll-like figure is the body of an Englishman? And so he will amuse me in his death. Yes. And you will sit there, my little wife. You will sit in that chair for the many days it will take me to prepare the carcass. You will sit and watch me day after day as with smoke and with heat I make the strong body of your lover smaller and smaller. You will sit there.
Ladies and gentlemen, a deep breath, please, before we go on with this story of a jealous husband and the strange and terrible revenge he took against his wife and the man she loved. Yes, before we go on with tonight's lights-out story, a moment for relaxation and a return to the realities of today. The place is a shipyard, and a worker is saying,
I quit my desk job because I wanted to help build ships to win the war, but I'm afraid I can't keep on. I'm losing weight. I'm so restless, I lay awake most of last night again. I feel so tired out so often when I know I shouldn't. I hardly know what to do.
Do? Why, find the cause of your trouble. And if it's a deficiency of vitamin B1 and iron, get ironized yeast tablets.
Vitamin B1 and iron? Ironized yeast tablets? I don't understand.
You see, you're working harder now, so naturally you need more strength and energy. But when you don't get enough vitamin B1 from your food, you may lose your appetite, not eat all you need, and so lose weight and strength. And without enough iron, you may be weak and pale and too often feel all in. But ironized yeast tablets give you both vital substances. Vitamin B1 with iron.
Maybe I better try ironized yeast tablets.
By all means do if you're deficient in vitamin B1 and iron. Ironized yeast tablets have greatly helped many, many others with these deficiencies. See if they're not of equal benefit to you. See if before long you too aren't saying...
Since I've been feeling so much better, I sleep like a baby. That tired out feeling is gone. I'm sure glad I tried ironized yeast tablets.
And now back to our lights out story of the little people.
Fire is warm. Hell, warm, so very warm. The air filled with smoke. The dry swirling smoke, see how it coils around him. At first, how often you cried out when I talked like this, but now you're silent. Weeks. How many weeks has it been? 4, 5, 6? Used to take my savage friends 10 weeks to dry and cure the bodies of their enemies. 10 weeks. And I have done it in 5. Look at him. 6 foot strong and broad he was, but now a doll in size, a small brown doll. Oh, what weary days they've been, filling the body full of sand and slowly turning in the smoke and the heat, not too quickly, not too slowly, not too close to the flames. And now, the man that was John Douglas, a doll, a brown doll of death. The flames are noisy. Noisy as you are silent, little Ellen. You are... Oh, I hadn't noticed. Your eyes are closed. Wake up. Wake up! Wake up, I say. You've got to look at him. Your eyes have got to see him. You've got to see him. You're speaking. I cannot understand you. The gag, yes. Yes, I will take it off. Sitting there all these weeks, you haven't got the strength. There, that does it. Your lips are free. Well, look at him, Helen. Look at him and tell me what you think of John Douglas now. Helen, stop. Stop, you hear? Understand? You must understand.
Smoke, he will wait for me.
Smoke. What are you raving about?
Yes, smoke. See how it curls around him.
No.
He's waiting.
No, stop talking like that. Stop talking like that, I say.
He's waiting.
The knife. Where is the knife? I'll stop you. No! Ellen, I... All right. Dead. Up on the table with you. I must prepare you, Ellen, for the smoke and the fire. Took me 5 weeks with him, and now 5 more weeks with you. And then you will be as he is. Brown with the smoke of the curing fire. A little doll in size.
Borneo and the Celebes are not the only savage tribes which indulged in this most curious pastime of collecting human heads as trophies. In my travels in far-off places, I have come across at least 20 other races who participate in this strange custom.
Let's get out of here, Mamie. What it means is dry as dust. Oh, but who cares about Ed Hunt and men and the likes of that? Let's get out of here and go to a cinema. Quiet.
Oh,
all right, all right.
They went raiding and killing their enemies, generally in nocturnal surprises. These savages severed the heads of the dead and returned with them to their villages. Members of the tribe believe their rank in the next world depends upon the number of heads secured. But, unquestionably, the most curious custom is found among the Yavaros of South America, who not only sever the heads of their enemies, but also are known to shrink the bodies of the dead until they are small, almost doll-like in size. These bodies are kept in the large huts and treasured highly. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I have a surprise for you. In my recent trip to South America and my visit to the Yavaros, at great personal risk, I was able to procure two of the macabre specimens. Yes. Yes, I have here in this trunk the shrunken bodies of two full-sized human beings. That is, at one time they were full-sized, but now they have the size of large dolls. A man and a woman, ladies and gentlemen, perfectly preserved. The only specimens of their kind in existence outside of the sulfur jungles of South America. Never before have they been seen or displayed upon the lecture platform, but tonight I am going to show them to you.
And now you make your public debut, my two beauties. Ellen and John, the new sensation of the lecture stage.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you please, presenting two perfect specimens, the only ones of their kind, of the secret process which enables the savages of the jungles of South America to reduce their enemies to doll-like size. Here we have a living man, about 6 foot in size during his lifetime, now reduced to midget size. And likewise, here a woman, once a living, breathing individual like you and you and you, now this horrible trophy of the curer's eye.
You see, Ellen and John, they like you. You are a success. A huge success. You. You're talking. You.
No. No, you cannot talk. Dad, you cannot talk. No. You cannot talk. You're dead. You're both of you dead.
Sure, Captain, it's a strange passenger we got aboard this time, I must say.
Oh, you mean Strensky? Aye, strange he is, mate.
But what's he running away from, sir?
Sure, mate, that ain't a proper question to be asking of a man when he lays as many pound notes on the table as that man did for this passage. Get me out of England tonight, he said. And get him out of England I did.
Now, could he be one of them embezzlers?
Oh, aye, that he might. The trunk he was carrying, where he wouldn't let any of the men lay a hand on it. He brought it down to the cabin himself.
I'd like to get a look in it.
Aye, and so would I. But he stays in that cabin of his all the time. He's down there now. And I'll bet he's looking in that trunk this very
day. The cabin door is locked. No one can come in when the door is locked. It's going to stay locked until we get there. South America, they won't get me there. No one will get me there. Why did I run away? What's the matter with me? No one heard them but I. No one in that audience but I. They're in that trunk there. The two of them. Why don't I find out now if no one heard them but I? Why don't I? For sure. Yes, I must. No, they couldn't have talked, not they. The two of you lying there. You didn't talk, did you? No. No, of course you didn't. You're dead. You're more than dead. Hollow flesh shrunk by the smoke of heat until you're smoky little dolls.
Aaron and John, I'm free of you forever. Forever. You, Alan, thing that was Alan. Why don't you say something? Again, I heard you again, the two of you, I heard you. No. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it, you little things. You can't speak. Your dad burned in the flames. Stop it. All right, I'll stop you. I'll stop you. Into the sea. I'll throw you into the sea. Come, you and you. I've got you in my hands. I'll throw you into the sea. First, you, Aaron. Into the water. There. And now you, John. Into the sea. The sea will stop that tongue of yours. There. Now I'm through with you. Through with you. The water will stop your mouths. It stopped it. And three of you forever. The two of you forever.
Huh? What's the matter? What's the matter?
The matter? Oh, what do you mean, Captain? Nothing is the matter.
Well, I thought I saw you throw something in the water. In fact, I'm sure of it.
Oh, just some old things. Yes, that's it. Some old things I didn't want.
Oh, I see. Well, as long as everything's all right.
Yes. Everything's all right. Now.
It is a weird night, isn't it?
Weird? Why do you say that, man?
Yeah, it's so dark. No moon, not a star in the sky. It's like we were sailing at the black of a tomb without even candlelight to lead us. You know, if I was a superstition... What in the devil's name is that?
What? What are you talking about?
There. To starboard, see? Two lights. Take it, what lights are those?
They're coming closer.
Our ship lights? No, that can't be. Why, I've sailed these waters for 15 years.
It's they.
What?
The two of them, their faces. See them gleaming faces. Aaron, John, get back. Back to the water I threw you in. Back.
Trensky, what's back. Come over you? Back. Stop leaning over the rail. You'll fall in. You'll fall in, man. Watch out.
Help! I fell in. Help me! Here! I'm here! Save me! Save me!
Stay afloat!
Yes, I'll stay afloat. They'll save me. I won't die. I won't. They'll save me.
No, Peter.
Huh?
Take his other arm, Evan. I have his legs.
No. Let go of me. Let go.
Come, Strensky.
No, stop. Alan, John, the two of you, stop. You're pulling me under.
Drawing me.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
Conservation is the first and best resource option for BC. Do your part. Turn off the lights when you leave a room and unplug your cell phone charger when charging is complete. Visit bchydro.com to find out more ways you can make a difference. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
And now, this is the Man in Black, here again to introduce our performance tonight of Suspense. This evening are two distinguished gentlemen from the Hollywood sound stages, Mr. Donald Crisp and Mr. John Loder. Mr. Crisp and Mr. Loder are here to enact for us a strange and startling drama in which they, in the interest of justice, made use of an unusual method to wring a confession of guilt from a criminal. The story is by Rupert Croft Cook and is called Banquo's Chair. And so with Banquo's Chair and the performances of Donald Crisp as Sir William Brent and John Loder as Arthur Grange, Sir William's friend who relates the story to us, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
I'd like you to look at this photograph. It's the picture of Sir William Brent, ex-head of the English Criminal Investigation. I knew Sir William well, and he always terrified me. Not in the sense that he was brutal or evil, he was none of that. But look at that cold face, particularly his eyes. When he looked at you, you flushed with guilt. Every misdeed you ever committed in your life floated over your face. A glance from him made you feel as if you were stark naked. He saw you with all your defenses down. Sir William was the scourge of criminals, coldly unemotional, utterly without fear or passion. He tracked them down mercilessly and never lost a case. There was no feeling in him, no pity, no hate, nothing but terrifying, cold intelligence. And he was deadly to everyone he went after. I'm going to tell you about his last case. A case that, well, even recalling it sends real shudders through me. I swear it's true. I saw it with my own eyes. I wish I never had. I witnessed it in all its dreadful details. One night at the club, about 11 o'clock, a boy came up to me.
Telegram for you, sir.
I ripped open the envelope and read the telegram. Dear Arthur, will you come and dine with me at Turret House, Sydenham on Thursday? There will be several guests, and I think I can promise you an unforgettable evening. It was signed by Sir William Brent. I was annoyed. I don't like to receive telegrams so late in the evening, and Sir William could easily have phoned, unless he didn't want to go into details with me. I decided to phone him.
Hello? Hello?
This is Arthur Grange calling.
Yes, I know. Did you receive my telegram?
Yes, Sir William. What's all the mystery about?
Well, I'll tell you about it on Thursday. Are you coming?
Yes, I'll be there.
Very good. I particularly want you to be there.
You sound so mysterious, I'm thinking of coming armed or bringing several bodyguards.
No, it won't be necessary to bring any bodyguards. But you'd better come armed. Well armed. Yes, bring a revolver. Good night.
Early Thursday evening, I made my way to Turret House. A windy November rain slashed at the streets. Turret House is a huge red brick, unpleasantly somber mansion, an ugly product of Queen Victoria's time. There it squatted, back of the road, almost hidden to view by several dripping pine trees. The neighborhood had known better days. I walked up along the unkept path until I reached the great oaken door. I let the knocker fall once or twice, and the door opened.
Good evening, Mr. Grange. I was waiting for you.
Hello, Lane.
Nasty night, sir, isn't it?
It's not much warmer in here.
There's a fire in the dining room, sir.
Whatever made Sir William move into this drafty dungeon?
Oh, we haven't moved in, sir. It's only temporary. Sir William just rented. We still live in the West End.
Oh, I see. Have any of the other guests arrived?
Yes, Mr. Grange. Miss Stone is here.
Miss Stone?
Yes, the mystery writer. This way, Mr. Grange. I'll show you to the dining room. Sir William will be down shortly.
Oh, hello. I'm Roberta Stone.
How do you do? I'm Arthur Grange, an old friend of Sir William.
Yes, I know.
I've read some of your mystery stories and enjoyed them very much.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Grange.
Just what is going on here tonight?
I don't know. Sir William sounded awfully mysterious. But then, I've known Sir William for a long time. He never lets anyone down. If anything, he understates.
I know. He told me to come armed.
He told me the same thing. Here's my gun. I must admit, I've never fired it in my life.
This house is certainly a proper background for anything unpleasant.
It's already been the scene of a crime.
Oh? What crime?
Murder. A particularly unpleasant one.
Really? I must say the murderer couldn't have picked a more ideal spot.
Isn't it a fact? You know, I once wrote a story.
Good evening, Roberta. Arthur, I'm glad you're both on time.
Hello, Sir William.
Hello. A nice apartment you have here. A sort of mausoleum and dining room combined.
You're a bit afraid, aren't you?
Of course not. Why should I be?
Your eyes give you away.
What's all this about? You invite us to this godforsaken dungeon and tell us to come armed?
Don't be upset, Arthur. I'm sure you'll come out of this all right.
You mean we may be in some danger?
Naturally, I wouldn't tell you to come armed otherwise.
Who is this other guest, Sir William?
There are two more guests. But first we'll have a drink and then I'll tell you both all about it. Lane!
Yes, Sir William?
Will you serve the drinks?
Yes, sir.
Now I'll tell you what's going to happen tonight. This house, Turret House, was the scene of the Sydenham murder. A very famous case.
Yes, I know about it.
That's right. No offense, old man, but wasn't it the only case you never solved?
You're wrong, Arthur. I solved the Sydenham case, but I couldn't bring the criminal to justice because of insufficient evidence.
You mean you knew who the murderer was?
Oh, yes, of course. It was the nephew. The police knew it, too.
Then why in the world didn't you bring the case to a conclusion?
Because the nephew had an absolute and unimpeachable alibi. To have arrested him would have meant a waste of time and money and release in the end. Besides, according to English law, a man discharged can never be arrested again on the same murder charge.
Well, this is all very fascinating. Has it anything to do with our being here tonight?
Yes, Roberta, it has. In a short while, the nephew, John Bedford, will be here to dine with us. And, oh yes, the victim, Miss Ferguson.
What? Well, wait. You mean Miss Ferguson wasn't actually murdered?
Miss Ferguson is quite dead. Has been dead these 2 years.
You mean you're going to have the body of Miss Ferguson here at dinner? Oh, this is a little too much. If you'll excuse me, I'll dine elsewhere tonight.
Not so fast, Roberta. Perhaps you'd better wait until you hear the rest of the story.
This promises to be a very gay dinner.
Oh, yes.
Now, as you both know, I've never lost a case except the Sydenham murder, which will be finished tonight. Now, I'm an egotist. I don't believe there's a criminal in all England that can outwit me. As a matter of fact, I've resigned from the criminal investigation for the sole reason of trapping Mr. John Bedford.
It's hard to believe.
Well, I told you I was an egotist. No criminal has beaten me yet, and no one ever will.
You have an awful lot of patience.
Infinite patience. I devoted 2 years to this case, and now that my moment of triumph has arrived, I wanted to have some witnesses. A writer who will record the event, and an admirer who will applaud with awe the trickiness of my scheme.
Well, if it's as gruesome as I think it is, I won't be here to watch it.
Oh, yes, you will. Horror has a way of fascinating and hypnotizing people. Besides, Arthur, you'd be ashamed to run out now.
No, I'll stay, of course.
So will I.
Good. Now, before I tell you my scheme, let me first acquaint you with the details of the murder. Exactly 2 years ago tonight, old Miss Ferguson.
Where is that foolish maid?
Yes, Miss Ferguson.
Why don't you answer when I call?
I was in the kitchen, ma'am.
It's after 10 o'clock. You should be on your way home.
I was just about to leave.
Has my nephew called?
No, ma'am. Mr. Bedford hasn't called since yesterday. I told him he couldn't come in, just like you said.
I don't ever want to see him again. He's no good. He's an evil man who will come to an evil end. You're never to let him in here, Hilda.
He won't ever come in this house if I can help it.
No, ma'am. Now you'd better run along and make sure all the doors are bolted.
Yes, ma'am. Good night, Miss Ferguson.
Good night, Hilda. A pity about that nephew of mine. I'll change my will. Won't leave him a penny, I won't. In the morning, I'll change the will. That's... Who's there? Who is it?
It's I, Aunt Martha, your own affectionate nephew.
What are you doing in my house?
You're not at all pleased to see me. Your only living relative, too.
I'd like you to leave at once or call the police, Uncle.
I'd rather not, Auntie. I want to have a talk with you.
You don't want to talk to me. All you want is money.
Yes, Auntie, I do want money. And lots of it.
You've got all the money you'll ever get out of me. You won't even get a penny after I die. I'll see to that. Perhaps you'll appreciate the value of money after you've worked for it.
You know, Auntie,
You're wearing gloves. What are you up to?
I've made up my mind.
What are you doing? Keep away.
You're an old woman. All that money is no good for you. You can never use it. I'm young, and money means life to me. A rich and gay life. You're old, and you're going to die soon anyway.
No. No, it can't be. You're not going to do that.
Yes, Auntie, I am. You don't want to live anywhere. You're lonely, you're sick, and you're old. I'm going to do you a favor. Nobody can hear you now. I'm your heir. Your only heir, Auntie. Your next of kin. The estate is going to be mine. All of it. Now, don't you worry, Auntie. We'll have a fine funeral for you.
That's pretty much the way old Miss Ferguson was murdered.
Oh, how ghastly.
Hilda found the body the next morning. I immediately went to work on the case. All the evidence pointed to John Bedford. Everyone believed he committed the crime. He almost admitted it himself. I had him brought to my office for questioning. Oh, hello, Bedford. Come in.
Thank you, sir. How'd you do, will you?
Cigarette?
Oh, thank you.
Well, how does it feel to kill your own aunt?
May I have a light, please?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. I wouldn't know, Sir William. You see, I never killed anyone. Have you?
I have, Mr. Bedford. And I've sent quite a few to the gallows.
Yes, so I understand.
What was your relationship to Miss Ferguson?
She was my aunt.
Don't be flippant. Flippancy only proves your guilt.
Well, to tell you the truth, sir, my aunt didn't like me. She thought I was a spendthrift and a useless parasite, and she was quite right.
Would you mind telling me where you were the night your aunt was murdered?
Oh, not at all. In jail. I had drunk a little too much and gotten into a bit of a tiff with someone, that's all.
Have you ever been arrested for drunkenness before?
Never, Sir William. This was my first offense.
It's quite an alibi.
Quite a fact. It would hardly be possible for me to be in jail and kill my aunt at the same time, you know. Unless, of course, my aunt came into my cell and allowed me to murder her, after which she walked back to Turret House as a ghost, dragging her body behind her.
According to my reports, Mr. Bedford, you drink very little. No one who knows you has ever seen you drunk before. You probably got drunk in joyful anticipation of murdering your aunt.
As a thoroughgoing criminal investigator, don't you think you ought to check my story?
I already have.
Oh.
You've done a very skillful job. Too bad you couldn't use your talents for something constructive.
Well, why don't you arrest me, Sir William?
No, Mr. Bedford. I have time. Plenty of time.
Well, you'd better work fast. By the time you get around to me, I'll have spent all of my aunt's beautiful money.
It's not the money we're after. It's you. Your beautiful life. Good day, Mr. Bedford. That's how matters stood. I refused to let any of my men arrest him.
But how in the world could he have murdered his aunt while he was in jail?
Perhaps he bribed the prison guard to let him out for an hour.
Yes, Roberto, I believe he did. Unfortunately, the guard died of pneumonia soon afterwards, which left us no further source of evidence.
As far as I can see at the moment, Sir William, you haven't a leg to stand on.
You're quite right, Arthur, I haven't. Except that every man, particularly a criminal, has an Achilles heel. I discovered John Bedford's weakness.
What is it?
He's superstitious.
Mm.
And it annoyed me tremendously that John Bedford was my first failure. Here was a clever, calloused criminal who laughed at me. No one had ever done that before. Bedford knew I could do him no harm, and he made the most of it. Carefully and patiently, I thought it over. I looked upon Bedford as you would look on a Chinese puzzle. There is no such thing as an impregnable defense. A few months later, I went to visit Bedford.
Well, Sir William Brent. What a surprise. Won't you come in, please?
Thank you, Mr. Bedford.
Oh. Well, I'm honored to have the great Sir William Brent pay me a visit. You're not after any more clues, I hope. It gets rather tedious, you know.
No, not at all. I know when I'm licked.
Well, I don't want to appear smug, sir, but everyone has his Waterloo. Would you have a drink?
No, thanks. I suppose you're curious about why I came here.
Well, I'd hardly imagined it was a friendly visit.
On the contrary, it is. You see, I admire brilliant people, no matter what they're calling.
Oh, you're very flattering, Sir William.
I've resigned from the criminal investigation. I'm a private citizen now.
Yes, I've heard about that.
Most people misunderstand me. It wasn't my love for justice that made me pursue my profession with such tenacity and...
Success?
With the sole exception of your case, of course, it was a game of skill to me. My wits against all comers. I lost in your case. But then we've all got to lose sometime, haven't we?
I don't believe you, Sir William. You're still out to get me.
Well, there isn't much of a chance, is there?
I'm afraid not, Sir William. I've kept out of trouble so far. Knock wood.
That's an odd habit for a man like you, knocking on wood. You're not superstitious, are you?
Huh? Of course not. Just a habit since I was a child.
I see. Well, now to the reason for my visit. I noticed in the papers that you're looking for a tenant for Turret House.
Oh, yes, I am.
I'd like to rent it.
Well, the scene of the crime, huh? Well, of course, why not? There's no harm in it. As a matter of fact, I'll let you have it very cheaply.
And that's how I rented this house. The house where the murder was committed.
Well, what's your plan?
It had better be a good one. Mr. Bedford sounds like a hard customer.
Yes, it's a strange plan, but an effective one. I saw Bedford frequently. Our acquaintance blossomed into a kind of friendship, an armed friendship, of course. He knew I was out to get him, and I wanted him to know that. He's vain, very vain. And this game intrigued him. I also learned that he was very superstitious, although he denied it vigorously. Tonight is the anniversary of the murder, and tonight Mr. Bedford dines with us at 8 o'clock.
It's nearly 8 now.
Now, this is the plan. You know Mae Wakefield?
Of course. She's the famous Shakespearean actress.
That's right. During dinner, she will enter the room in the precise likeness of Miss Ferguson, the murdered woman. We, of course, will pretend not to see her. We remain outwardly unconscious of her. Only Bedford will be aware of her presence. I believe Bedford will confess.
I'd imagine he'd keep away on this night, especially if it's the anniversary.
He's giddy with success. And also, the fact that Roberta Stone, the famous writer, is here with us. Tweaks his vanity. He'll be here promptly.
Oh, I don't like this.
Well, this is just like one of your stories. It doesn't become you to be frightened.
Oh, I won't run away.
Well, there's one more thing. During dinner, the electric lights will be switched off at the main, and candles will be lit.
Oh.
We must have the correct atmosphere. Mm-hmm. You understand now? You're not to see Mae Wakefield. She doesn't exist for us. Is that clear?
I'll look right through her.
Oh, it gives me the creeps.
That, I am sure, is our Mr. Bedford.
The appearance of John Bedford suddenly made the whole scene grimly real. He was a tall, well-built man in his late 30s, immaculately dressed and perfectly groomed. At first sight, his face seemed pleasant enough, but on closer scrutiny, his gray eyes were hard and cold. He looked us over, all of us, with arrogance and superiority. I heartily wished I was elsewhere. This was one scene I had no desire to witness. After the introductions were over, we sat down to dinner.
Is it still nasty outside, Mr. Bedford?
Yes, and getting worse. Looks like we're in for a few days of this.
Too bad. I was going to do some riding tomorrow.
The soup is excellent.
Yes, your cook should be congratulated, son. The soup's a masterpiece.
Poor Alice. She's been my cook for 20 years. But she's given me notice, absolutely refuses to stay here, says this house is haunted.
So?
Roberta, this might make an interesting story for you.
Yes, Sir William.
You should speak to her. Alice swears that she has seen the figure of an elderly lady with finger marks on her throat walking about this house.
Oh, come now, Sir William. This is too good. Such an obvious attempt to frighten me. Sir William is convinced that I murdered my aunt. Please, Sir William, a little more subtlety. Surely I deserve it.
Perhaps the cook did see the figure.
As you very well know, Mr. Bedford, I don't believe in ghosts, and I'm sure my cook never saw this elderly figure. It's all in her mind.
Well, I'm afraid your little attempt didn't work, sir, but I must admire your graceful admittance of its failure.
Yes, I suppose I'd better give up, shouldn't I?
Oh, no, never give up. If at first you don't succeed, you know.
Do you live very far from here, Mr. Bedford?
Thank you, Miss Stone, but there's no need to change the topic. I hope you find this game as amusing as I do.
I'm sorry, Mr. Bedford, but this isn't my idea of pleasant dinner conversation.
Oh, we'll talk of pleasant things.
I saw a very exciting play last night.
Excuse me a moment. It's really fearfully hot in here. Do you mind if we get a little air, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. It is rather warm. Lane, open one of the windows, please.
Yes, sir.
Awful weather, isn't it?
Yes. I don't know how we're going to get home, really.
It's a bad month of the year. I'd intended to go to the Riviera for...
What's the matter?
Lane, what on earth is wrong with the lights?
I don't know, sir.
Well, don't stand there. Light the candles. We can't sit here in the darkness. And get the chauffeur. He knows something about electric lights.
I'll call the chauffeur right away, sir.
I'm terribly sorry about this. We've had trouble with the wiring before. The chauffeur will have it fixed in a few moments. Now, let's get on with our dinner.
If this is one of your tricks, Sir William,
Have some more wine, Mr. Bedford.
It was a tense and terrible moment. I looked at Roberta. She was pale and frightened. Bedford, for all his poise, was uneasy. He didn't know whether Sir William was planning anything or whether this was really an accident. My heart was pounding away, and my palms were moist with perspiration. Only Sir William appeared cool. There was not a trace of emotion in his face.
Oh, Mr. Bedford, you were saying about visiting the Riviera.
Yes?
It's quite a change from England at this time of year.
Well, I suppose I'll make the trip next month, but I...
What's the matter, Mr. Bedford?
Nothing. Nothing at all. I wish we could have some light. Rather difficult to see.
Yes, I'm terribly sorry this had happened just at dinner. Have a little more wine, Mr. Bedford.
Yes, yes, thank you.
The figure of a woman had entered the room. She had come in silently, like a ghost. We all saw her, but not one of us moved or made a sign of recognition. In the dim candlelight, she looked ghostly and unreal. Bedford looked at all of us to see if we also had seen the figure. But we ate our dinner grimly. He looked again, then shook his head and gulped more wine.
Don't let him see anything.
See what, Mr. Bedford?
This is another one of your tricks. Can't any of you see her?
What's got into you, Bedford?
It's my aunt. My aunt.
Perhaps you've had too much to drink.
Huh?
Your aunt's dead, Mr. Bedford. You're not seeing ghosts, I hope.
Perhaps I drank too much.
Yes, of course.
She's coming toward me.
Now, calm yourself. I've never seen you like this.
What?
There's no one else here. Do you see anyone, Roberta?
No. No, Sir William.
I don't either.
I'm leaving.
I can't make you out, Bedford. You don't seem to be drunk.
You're not wearing your gloves today, John.
She's real. Can't any of you see her? Can't you hear her?
What's come over you, Bedford?
I'm leaving here. She's at the door. She won't let me out now.
I'm an old woman. Money is no good for me. I'm lonely, John. I'm lonely.
Let me pry your mouth out of my way.
There's no one in your way, Bedford. Come, sit down.
Get away from that door. I'll murder you again. Give me your mother. I'll murder you again. You always shall murder you again.
All right, switch on the lights. Now, Officer Graham, come along.
What?
Arrest him. You've heard the confession. Put the handcuffs on him.
I've got him, sir.
Heaven. I have never seen anything so horrible.
Well, Bedford, it seems that I've finally caught up with you.
I'll kill her again. I'll kill her again.
That wasn't your aunt. It was Mae Wakefield, the actress.
I'll kill her again. I'll kill her again.
Take him away, Graham. He's in a state of shock. Well, shall we continue with our dinner?
I hope you're fully satisfied, Sir William.
Quite. It's been a long job, but it has ended as I knew it would. I'm most grateful to you both for your help.
I thought it was a pretty grim affair.
Oh, your methods repel me. But I suppose you know your job. Mae Wakefield certainly knew hers. That was the finest piece of acting I've ever seen.
Her makeup was incredibly good. We must congratulate her. She's probably gone to her room. Lane!
Yes, sir.
Please call Miss Wakefield.
Miss Wakefield, sir?
Yes, the lady who's been assisting us this evening.
Well, I'll look for her, sir.
Yes, tell her to come down and join us. We have a fine dinner waiting for her.
Excuse me, sir, but this telegram came a little while ago. I didn't want to disturb you during dinner.
Oh, yes, let me have it. Good heavens.
Sir William, what's wrong?
I'll read it to you. Severe influenza makes it impossible for me to leave my bed tonight. Will tomorrow night do?
Signed, May Wakefield.
Lord, help us. If it wasn't May Wakefield, then who was that figure here tonight?
There was no answer. I looked at Sir William, staring at the telegram. His face was gray and stony. On his left temple, a crooked blue vein stood out. It twitched once or twice and then was motionless. He looked as though he'd seen a ghost.
And so closes Banquo's Chair, starring Donald Crisp and John Loder. Tonight's tale of suspense. Now you may want to make a note of a change of time in these programs. Beginning next Tuesday, Suspense will be heard a half hour later, or 10 to 10:30 Eastern War Time. This is your narrator, the man in black, who conveys to you Columbia's...
A show dedicated to playing psychedelic music from parts of the spectrum, rock, pop, electronic, as well as garage and noise rock. Sundays, 5 to 6 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.